This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Kansas 1st District Representative Tracy Mann. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Kansas Congressman Tracy Mann next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Kansas Big First Representative Tracy Mann understands the need to protect the environment, but also knows the nation needs a reliable supply of energy. Mann is confused by the Biden administration's push for electric vehicles over liquid fuels from renewable sources.
My first thought was, it seems like the administration is just completely disconnected from reality, and especially the reality of the needs of rural Kansas, of rural America. You know, these efforts to push towards electric, and I'm an all of the above guy, but this push to move away from fossil fuel, which we have right here in our country, and forcing the market to go electric this fast is a massive mistake. The grid can't handle it. We don't have the baseload capacity to handle it. And I think if these regulations push through, I think we'll look back and say one of the worst things that the administration has done, which frankly, so far, I think is saying quite a bit.
So this comes at a time with the administration making the announcement regarding emissions when a number of Midwestern states have been calling on the White House for an emergency decision on selling E15 this summer.
Yeah, and that's even more infuriating. We have, for many summers now, Republican and Democrat administrations have approved the sale of E15. We know it's safe now. We know it's not a problem. We know the market wants it. And to see the administration being unwilling to do that is very, very frustrating. It's almost an irrational war on fossil fuel, but it's really liquid fuel. You know, because they just, if it's not an electric vehicle, it's not an electron, to the administration, for whatever reason, it's in the administration's ire, and they don't see fit to promote or use it. These are, you know, materials, and this is fuel that we can grow in our fields, and you know, that we can produce here domestically. So to move away from that, Jeff, makes absolutely no sense. And for them to not approve E15 this summer, and I'd like to see E15, of course, year round. Have legislation or pushing to do that, but this administration is moving in absolutely the wrong direction. It's very disappointing.
It seems that we might be moving per se out of the skillet and into the fire. For number one, we are dependent on OPEC nations for crude oil, but with regard to electric vehicles, we still need minerals and we need batteries to function those automobiles, and China appears to be the lead source at this point.
That's right. And again, I'm a free market guy. And so, but to force the market, you know, if the market wants to go there, that's the market's choice. But to force the market via regulations to move to all electric, it just makes no sense. And you're right, it'll embolden and help China, our adversary. We can produce fossil fuels and our energy and our liquid fuel here, right here in the U.S. Why we wouldn't be promoting that, expanding that, making it easier to do that, thanking our liquid fuel producers, our ethanol producers for what they're doing for America instead of penalizing and moving in this different direction. It just makes absolutely no sense to me.
Congressman, can you go into some of the details of the Lower Cost Energy Act that you are lending support to?
Yeah, so this is H.R. 1, which is really a bundling of a whole bunch of multiple pieces of legislation that have been introduced. And it would not solve all of our problems for, you know, where we're at from an energy standpoint, but it would be a massive step in the right direction. And it would do things, you know, this legislation would do a lot of things, one of which is it would really speed up the permitting process that is currently in place. So one of the problems we have, when you look at base load power, you know, we've not added any new coal-fired plants or nuclear plants for decades now, in large part because of the permitting process. And the permitting process to build new pipelines, like what we've seen with the Keystone XL pipeline and others, is so burdensome. You know, to get through a NEPA permit process, NEPA, National Environmental Protection Agency, you know, that can be on average, we're hearing, that takes on average 7 to 9 years. So this legislation speeds that up. It puts some shot clocks on it so that the bureaucrats can't just delay and drag out the permitting process. So that's a big part of it. It also, from a tax standpoint, is helpful for oil and gas producers. And there's a lot of things to really loosen up our energy production currently in the U.S., which is what we ought to be doing.
I noted one element suggests that it boosts production and processing of critical minerals. What's standing in the way of that now?
Bureaucracy. And we have a lot of critical minerals around the U.S. that we are not able to mine. And that's because of, again, the permitting process and how the bureaucracy prevents or makes it so burdensome, so expensive to get into these big projects that we're not seeing the expansion of these critical minerals. Meanwhile, and you mentioned this earlier, Jeff, and you're exactly right. You know, these minerals are very plentiful in China, and China is out trying to build relationships and secure minerals in other countries where China doesn't have the minerals they need. They're out trying to secure the minerals that they're going to need for decades to come. Meanwhile, we're doing the exact opposite. We'll make it hard for our mineral producers right here in the U.S. It's very disappointing.
While we've mentioned China, I'll introduce this question. How big of a threat to national security now do you see China, and especially its actions toward Taiwan?
Yeah, I think the Chinese is, we're in 2023, and as we look at the rest of this century, I mean, China is our biggest threat, biggest adversary. And we're seeing pretty bipartisan support for that notion. You know, the new House has a select committee now on China, Republicans and Democrats really looking at what are the Chinese doing, how are they taking advantage of us, what are they up to on the world stage? What policies do we need to change? But I'm very concerned that China will make a move on Taiwan here at some point. As we know, you know, Taiwan, they make a lot of computer chips, a lot of things that we need in our electronics today. And China clearly is the biggest threat, as I see it, on the world stage. And that'll be the case if we don't take actions here for a long time.
On March the 20th, the Biden administration's new definition of waters of the U.S. went into place. We had two states initially that saw litigation against it, and then there were added 24 more states over this past week where a judge has ruled that the waters of the U.S. is not in play. How is this deja vu all over again, if you will, from back at 2015 with the Obama WOTUS rule?
Yeah, it feels like it's kind of the return to a bad dream, right? I do town halls all over my district. I think I've done 35 town halls so far this year, did a couple or a few just this week. And this is an issue that is absolutely coming up at many, if not most, of my town halls. People concerned about government regulation and overreach. And, you know, case in point is this WOTUS, these WOTUS rulings. I think it's important for people to understand that everybody is for clean water, but to define the government, the federal government's jurisdiction to be as far down as drainage ponds, drainage ditches and farm ponds is far beyond the jurisdiction and the original intent of the Clean Water Act. So, and you nailed it. Obama rolled out these regulations or this furthering of the regulations. Trump rolled them back, and now we're seeing Biden push them forward. In the House and then also in the Senate, we voted to strike down this regulation or the expansion on this regulation, passed, by the way, bipartisan in both houses. Then just last Friday, we saw President Biden veto our efforts to overturn this regulations. And so we'll see if next week we don't try to override the veto. But it is not good, and it's just discouraging to see these regulations that continue to come out of Washington that make it harder for our ag producers to do what they do best, and that's produce food for all of us.
on the thought of significant nexus returning in the definition, it was your cohort from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas, who on this program said it's as if the administration wants to regulate raindrops from the heavens to the ocean.
That's well said. Congressman Lucas, Frank has a gift for words, and that sure seems like it's what they're trying to do. And as you know, and our listeners know, it's water, it's air, it's, you know, chemicals, it's all these things that the federal government is regulating, trying to change the regulations on, make them more strict, and just makes it harder for rural America to continue to make it and do the things that we need to do.
In the regulatory area, stepped-up basis is one that has been of a concern, and the question is if we will see that again.
We will, and this is very much a concern. So the ability to pass farmland and small businesses from one generation to the next with a step-up or an increase in the tax basis, it's huge for our ag producers, it's huge for rural America, and this has been the law of the land for decades now, and What stirred this up, or the proposed change, was that the president proposes a budget every year, and in his budget, the last three times, he has proposed doing away with the stepped-up basis, taking a punch at this the very important tool, really for no reason and somewhat out of the blue, or at least it was when this initially happened. So my first term in office, we fought like heck, co-authored the legislation to preserve the stepped-up basis, offered amendments at the House Ag Committee to preserve the stepped-up basis. Long story short, we were successful, and the administration backed off of that. Did it again the next year, so this was last year. Fought it hard, and they backed down. And here, with the budget that he just proposed last month, once again proposed doing away with the stepped-up basis. So we once again have proposed the legislation to preserve it, but it just doesn't seem like the administration is getting the fact that this is disastrous for rural America, and that's not what the Congress will agree to. But why they continue to go there really for no reason is very frustrating, to say the least.
And the other side of the Capitol, in the upper chamber, Senators Thune and McConnell are among some others that want to eliminate the estate tax overall.
I agree with them, though. You think about it. These assets, you know, are taxed twice. You know, they are tax, you know, people are paying taxes while they're building their businesses and doing what they do best in this country. And then to see it also, the federal government take a big chunk of that when they die, that seems unfair, and I would strongly agree with them. You know, another tax, Jeff, that's really bad that the administration keeps trying to push down is what we call the farm killer tax. And again, this was buried in the budget. So basically what it says is any land or property owned by a family for 90 years or more would be subject to a one-time capital gains tax hit in 2030. So just think about it. If there's a family farm that has land in their family's farm since before 1940, if the farm killer tax, as President Biden proposed in his budget, goes through, means they would have to pay a large capital gains tax hit in the year 2030. So we've been jumping up and down about this, raising the profile of this issue, because if this is an example of if this tax were to go through, be disastrous. It would be not a game changer, but a game ender for many of our family farms, and that's why we got to work like heck to prevent it from happening.
On the Agriculture Committee, you chair the subcommittee on livestock, dairy, and poultry, and my, there are plenty of issues there. Let me start with dairy, where the Department of Agriculture and Secretary Vilsack had asked the dairy industry to come together with one thought for changing the federal milk marketing order. That appears to be a very uphill climb.
Yeah, it does, and I don't think really reflects what the dairy industry would like and what the market currently is. You know, got a lot of fantastic dairy producers in Kansas and, you know, all over the country. And generally speaking, you know, hearing from them, the current market and how it's structured, maybe some desire changes, but not a lot of significant changes are desired. So to hear him do that was certainly not the direction that what I'm hearing are dairy producers and marketers asking us to do.
Manhattan, Kansas is home to the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility, and the work that will come from there so important to protect the livestock of the U.S.
You know, this has been our construction for years and years now. The ribbon cutting is actually next month the latter part of May, and then it'll take a couple of years for it to actually be commissioned and to be up and running. But this is a big deal. You know, experts believe that 75% of new and emerging infectious animal diseases will be transmitted from animals to humans, and NBAF will be the home to the only maximum biocontainment space in the country where the USDA will be able to conduct comprehensive research and develop vaccines and antivirals, which will really help the animal health industry, affecting animal agriculture. And also it's important for humans as well. As we know, a lot of these viruses, you know, start off in animals and then transfer to humans. So it's a really important asset, you know, proven that it can be safe, and excited to see it become operational here in the next couple of years.
Will the challenges that we're seeing with the U.S. economy and economies around the globe make it more difficult to amend the nutrition program, knowing that need may be greater?
Potentially, but I think, you know, we're going to have a lot of discussions about, are there able-bodied people that are receiving benefits that really ought to be returning to work? I think the answer to that is yes. And then the question becomes, what's the best way to do that? You know, that would decrease costs of the government. It also is going to help our economy. I mean, I talk to employers every day, and their biggest struggle is workforce, of not being able to hire people. And so, you know, it would decrease our expenditures. It also is going to increase the tax revenue as people get back to work that ought to be working, while it's going to drive down inflation, because one of the biggest drivers of inflation is these increased labor costs. And when you restrict the supply of labor, it's going to increase costs. And so it really will be a win-win-win on a lot of fronts. And certainly I think is something that's going to be front and center as we start talking about, as we continue to discuss the farm bill and what's going to happen there.
So I haven't looked at the latest odds makers forecast, but what are the chances that a 23 farm bill gets done in 23? And what do you see are opportunities / challenges from the ARC and PLC side of this legislation?
There's a strong desire, truly on my part, I think overwhelmingly the committees and the rest of Congress, to get this farm bill done by September 30th, or at the very least by the end of this year. You know, we've got to provide certainty for agriculture and our ag producers as we move forward here. You ask, you know, what are the obstacles and what's going to happen? I think, you know, if we look into this summer, there's a lot of, this spring and summer, a lot of things are going to be happening in Washington, D.C., one of the biggest of which is going to be the debt limit, debt ceiling conversation. You know, our nation hits the debt limit, or our debt ceiling, looks like sometime in June. And I'm a big believer, if I max out my credit card, I'm responsible for those charges. And that's where we have as a nation. But I also think it's reasonable and responsible to have an adult conversation in our country about our spending and how we got in this spot, because we're $32 trillion in debt, and this is not sustainable. So legislatively, the debt limit, debt ceiling, you know, there's going to be a lot of conversations as that gets extended. There's going to be a lot of budget conversations and legislation as part of that. And then I view that it looks like the farm bill will probably follow that and come in behind it. So a lot of it depends on the timing of the debt limit, debt ceiling, as to what then's going to happen with the farm bill.
Economists have shown that you can spend billions on reference prices and trying to boost those and not make a lot of difference in terms of a percentage increase. What's the way forward for those who would like to balance reference prices with the economics of the day, and those as well that would like to see base acres with a voluntary update?
Yeah, you know, I would just say the reason that farm bills are five-year bills is that they, so that they can be updated and change with the times. And that's why we need to look at reference prices, you know, that are way below where the market currently is. As the market changes, the prices are changing, and I think that the reference prices in the farm bill should reflect that. And again, that's why, you know, these bills are five-year bills, long enough to provide some certainty, but short enough that it can change with the times as agriculture and as the market changes. So, and that's really where we're at, and it's a very timely conversation. I think we've got to acknowledge that this farm bill and this time that we're currently in, Jeff, you know, we have relatively high commodity prices. We also have record high input costs as well. And so the risks that are in agriculture today are higher than they have ever been on the production side. And I think this farm bill needs to acknowledge that as well.
I'm going to lump three things together here, and each one of those could carry on for a long conversation. But there are plenty of calls out there to expand FMD and MAP funding to help the U.S. grow opportunities in the globe. And then there are tremendous calls, and have been for some time, about adding dollars to the research budget in the U.S., where we're falling behind some major competitors in terms of public spending on agriculture research. Three areas of need and a very tight budget.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I appreciate you bringing up MAP and FMD. I sponsored, or I wrote, the Ag Export Promotion Act and introduced it back in February. Basically, it would increase monies for MAP Market Access Program. FMD stands for Foreign Market Development. When you look at, you know, I'm fiscally conservative, right? So I'm looking at where do we get the highest return for our dollars, the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak. And you look at the return on investment of the dollars that we spend on MAP, FMD, you know, to open up other markets, to expand them. These are public-private partnerships that, you know, those dollars are met by other ag groups as well. Incredibly high return on investment. We've got to keep opening up other markets and further our exports to make sure that we have the highest price possible for ag products. So that is, yes, it's tight budget times. I believe it's a matter of priority, and that MAP and FMD is something that certainly we need to prioritize, as well as research. And you look at it, you know, again, the return on investment for these research dollars, how do we increase production? How do we do it as efficiently, as effectively as possible? You know, we got to be investing and making wise investments there as well.
Congressman Mann, you have a tremendous responsibility with the Big First there in Kansas. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, sir, and today you've got the last word.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, it's a blessing to get to serve in Congress and to represent the First District of Kansas. And I just believe that our, you know, rural communities throughout Kansas and throughout your listenership all over this country, you know, they're like the pilot light of America, where the basic values that make America, America, are alive and well. And these are values like faith, family, hard work, personal responsibility, caring for our neighbors. You know, these values are alive and well in throughout our rural communities, and we got to make sure that we get ag policy right, because agriculture is what underpins our rural economies and makes sure that these values are still alive and well. And so there's a lot at stake with this farm bill. It's about agriculture, absolutely. It's also about keeping our basic American values alive and well, as rural America doesn't just survive but thrives and prospers. And also it's about freedom, because we are the free country we are, Jeff, I believe strongly, for a lot of reasons, one of which is we've never had to rely on another country for our food supply. If we get ag policy wrong and mess up ag production, then we're in a totally different spot if we have to start importing the bulk of our food, like what we've seen that we have to do with our fossil fuel. You know, we should be producing all of our ag products right here in the U.S. and make sure we have policies that promote and make sure that happens. So thanks for having me on, and I really appreciate you taking time today.
Our thanks to Kansas First District Representative Tracy Mann, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.